This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We are live as we head into the home stretch for 2019, 2 days away from the end of this year and the beginning of a new one. And 2 weeks from tonight, LSU will play in the championship game of college football in New Orleans against Clemson. 1959 all over again. The Tigers tangling in the Superdome as LSU tries to win its first championship in a dozen years, and LSU is rolling, beating mighty Oklahoma 63-28 Saturday in the Mercedes-Benz Arena in Atlanta. And LSU is 14-0 for the first time in school history, facing 14-0 Clemson, a team that is the defending national champion. They've not lost a game in 29 tries. So Clemson's a pretty tough opponent, but LSU has been installed as a 5.5-point favorite. Louis Unglesby is about to join us, one of the best-known trial lawyers in the state, but Saturday's victory by LSU was overshadowed by a death in the family. Carly McCord, a well-known media personality and sports reporter, was on her way to Atlanta to see the game, cover the game, and her husband was Steve Ensminger Jr., the son of the offensive coordinator for LSU, Steve Ensminger, who was a 4-year starter for LSU at quarterback, 1976 to 1979. And we wish the family of Carly McCord all the best, dead at the age of 30, a tragic passing of a remarkable person. And 5 years ago on this program, we talked with her, and we thank the Advocate for unearthing this interview and actually using some of the quotes from Carly in the story that appeared in yesterday's story about her death. And we will hear from her in her own words later this hour. We start with Louis Owens Unglesby. And Louis Unglesby was recently awarded, as in 24 days ago, the Calogero Justice Award, one of the top honors for any lawyer in the state of Louisiana. And he has had an amazing career, and I didn't even realize myself as a friend of his how substantial it had been until I read all the things he had done when the award was announced. He was, of course, recognized for his remarkable tenure in the early 80s. Former U.S. Attorney John Voles commenced the first of what was to be 3 high-profile criminal trials of former Governor Edwards. Louis cleared the governor's son, Stephen, before trial and then undertook the representation of the governor's nephew, Charles Isbell. That was when I first became aware of this man. That trial, as we know, the first one ended in a hung jury, 11-1, a guy named Clifford West. Wonder what happened to him, the holdout juror. He made it a non-acquittal, but John Voles came back, and this time it was 12-0. He was 35 years old when the first trial of court happened, and has, of course, handled trials near and far for many years. And we will talk with him about his career, but also about the state of affairs in the legal community. And lawyers have been hit hard as far as public relations. The latest, looking at Saturday's Advocate, Daniel Erspommer, the CEO of the Pelican Institute, hammers away at the legal wheels in Louisiana, saying the Pelican Institute has released a study which reveals frivolous, as Daniel Erspommer calls it, coastal litigation alone cost our state $113 million in economic activity and 2,000 jobs. Louis Unglesby, why are lawyers considered to be bad actors in our state?
Because the legislators now and people, the lobbyists and the Capitol find it as a good way to raise money for their thoughts. I mean, I'll say I don't know this gentleman who wrote that, but I'd love to see what statistics he's basing any of that on. More importantly, who are these people? What is their agenda? All of us, if I had my way, every legislator, every congressman, underneath them would be like a baseball card. This guy got this much money from these special interests. I wouldn't mind having that baseball card under my name. Everybody ought to know, what's your agenda? Does this fella, this gentleman, even have a job, or is this a job? Where did he come from? Where do these people that lobby in the legislature, what is their credentials to actually know anything? And they come in Louisiana, and they try to push us around because we're a small state and use us as a punching bag. In reality, If you just read the business report, if you read any of the national economic information, Louisiana is doing quite well right now. Everybody would love to have what's going on down in Cameron Parish and in Calcasieu. Everybody would love to have the tax exemptions that we give to big industry, none of which come with anything in return. Where do the executives for Exxon live? In the Woodlands in Houston, not Louisiana. Where's the pollution? On Scenic Highway in Louisiana. You can go on and on with that. But the fact is, we're still allow ourselves almost to live under Reconstruction policies. And then we complain about lawsuits, which are, if I had the lawsuits that I've won in any of the surrounding states, Arkansas, Mississippi, Texas, Oklahoma, Florida, Georgia, just the southern states, mm-hmm. with their legal system, I'd have 10 times as much money. You know, we do not have a favorable climate in reality for injured people. Louisiana, as an example, John Kennedy wrote, Buddy Romer signed, a product liability law. It is the most restrictive product mm-hmm. liability law in the country. You are much better off today if you were killed in a defective Ford truck or General Motors truck to have your lawsuit in Michigan, where they made it, than to have it in Baton Rouge.
Okay. Well, you've given us a lot to work with, and as you can hear, Louis Unglesby is an eloquent defender of lawyers being a necessity in our world. And this gentleman, Daniel Spommer, he is the CEO of the Pelican Institute for Public Policy. This organization, by the way, was out in front on criminal justice reform, but now is really going hard against lawyers, and I would suspect, don't know, but I would suspect, I hope Daniel corrects me if I'm wrong, they probably get money from the oil and gas industry. But he writes in his editorial in The Advocate, Louisiana's lawsuit problem not only affects the jobs market, it puts a personal strain on hardworking citizens' wallets. From skyrocketing car insurance rates to frivolous lawsuits, reports show the state's legal system is directly costing Louisianians more than $4,000 every year, more than 20% higher than the national average. Your response, Louis Unglesby.
All right. Well, first, I like the man's a good writer. More than 20% higher. So that would mean, what's 20% of $4,800?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So $800 higher. It's not nearly as cool when you say $800 instead of $4,000. So it costs you $3,200, apparently, in Texas or Arkansas or Mississippi or anywhere else. Number two, I don't know what the definition these gentlemen use of a, quote, frivolous lawsuit is. The law in Louisiana is that a lawyer has to sign a pleading when he files a lawsuit that identifies that it's in good faith, that it's based on a reasonable expectation of knowledge, and that it's brought properly. If it is not, then the judge can sanction the lawyer, and they should do. If they want to complain, get judges to do that. The other thing is, what lawsuits are they talking about? I just made a mistake and cut off your arm. Now you can't work anymore. You were learning to be okay. A certified welder. That's not frivolous.
All right. What about the lawsuit against the oil and gas industry that Governor Jindal fought mightily against, and this governor has been a proponent of? That is the biggest reason why the organizations like the Pelican Institute don't like John Bel Edwards. Was that a prudent move to go after the oil and gas industry for mitigation to the coastal damage to Louisiana?
I can answer that in three ways. Number one, I worked offshore for 4 years in the 60s, and we did everything they say we did.
This was when you were in college?
Yeah, we did all
of
that. So
you spent summers?
We wrecked the coast without any thought. Number two, nothing has stopped, and nothing stops today the oil and gas industry from fixing it. Nope, the fact that they're being sued or not being sued is irrelevant to their acceptance of their responsibility. If you want to avoid being sued, as soon as you have your wreck, you get out and you make sure that fellow goes to the hospital, and you go to the hospital with him, and you pay his medical bills, and you find out what his average weekly wage is, and you tell his wife you're paying it until he gets better, and you tell your insurance company to do the right thing, and then you don't get sued. The oil and gas industry talks about we would do this or we would do that. Nothing's stopping them. They could reduce or diminish whatever damages they're responsible for, if they are,
mm-hmm.
easily. Number two, there's no lawsuits that are active. They're all tied up in court. They have been tied up in court. There hadn't been a single witness testify yet. So there's nothing that is economically affecting the state of Louisiana. Number three, if you just do economics, oil and gas, like it or not, is yesterday's business.
877-217-5757 is your number. We'll return after this 90-second pause with more from Louis Unglesby on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana, spending time with Louis Unglesby. If you'd like to get in and talk to this year's recipient of the Pascal Calogero Justice Award, the number is 877-217-5757. And our email is talk@talklouisiana.org. And we're talking about lawyers becoming whipping boys and girls for industry, saying that the problems in Louisiana are related to lawsuit abuse. And John West of New Roads writes, the same kinds of people blame trial attorneys, just like they blame black people, Jews, and women. Without trial attorneys, we would never know our president is, this is John's word, a deadbeat who didn't pay the craftsmen and contractors who build his buildings. You say lawyers perform a vital service, and I think that that is the case. And a reminder also that as the year draws to a close, so does WRKF's fiscal year. That means time is running out to reach our budget for the year. We're hoping that we can do that in the final 2 days. We're 10,000 away from reaching the goal for 2019, and certainly we would like to hear from you. 926-3050 to talk to membership manager Gwen Pelagi, and she is at the ready to talk with you. That's 225-926-3050, extension 18 or extension 11. 877-217-5757 is our number. And Louis Owens Unglesby, a listener, Tracy at the Capitol, says, is part of the problem all these billboards that are on the highways promoting lawsuits for people, for lawyers who are advertising their wares? You have taken exception to lawyer advertising. Is that part of the issue as far as the so-called, quote, lawsuit abuse?
I think you're right, Tracy. I don't know that how much of that occurs, but certainly you're correct. And if they want to, if this is nothing more than this argument over raising the jury threshold from $50,000 to some lower amount, the idea that insurance companies would get a better deal on these car wrecks if they had more juries, that's a solvable problem. But that's a solvable problem today. Allstate, State Farm, Geico. If it's funny almost, if you watch TV, on one side you have four or five insurance companies running ads, and then you have three or four lawyers running ads. They each get in their own team, and then they cooperate with each other. If it weren't in, I don't know this absolutely, but I'm convinced that if Allstate or State Farm wanted to shut down advertising, all they'd have to do is declare war on advertisers. Everybody, you hired that law firm, you're getting a trial. In Baton Rouge, if you just took 50 cases
mm-hmm.
and you said, we're going to try these 50 cases, come skin or bleed, we're going to try these 50 cases, you could blow up the judicial system. All right?
So you're saying that most of these lawyer advertisers never go to court?
Ever, never.
Never go to court.
No.
As in, never.
Ever, never. And the whole concept is that this is that if you lowered the jury threshold, then more of these lawsuits might be exposed or jurors would be less willing to give money. Okay, but there are 22,000 lawyers in Louisiana. We're the most over-lawyered state in America.
And why is that?
Well, we got three law schools. I can't answer that. It's just facts of life. No, more than three law schools. I'm sorry. We have four law schools. But we got 22,000 lawyers. Now, it's easy for low money. All these insurance companies can lawyer up and fight for their rights with no problems. They could do, I could show them how to do it. And if they wanted to take the advertisers out, make a rule. We don't deal with you. You get your trial. You advertise you're a trial lawyer, you're going to get to be one. It wouldn't be hard at all. Instead, trying to go to the legislature and whine and complain while they're paying the money to keep the ads going because it's in their economic benefit is foolishness.
All right, let's go to some phone calls, says Matt Doyle, our crack producer, 877-217-5757. Kirk in River Ridge. Kirk, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, good morning. My name's Kirk Talbot. I'm a state representative. I did the bill last year or last session on some tort reform issues in what I thought would have lowered auto insurance rates, and I just wanted to get Mr. Unglesby thoughts on, I mean, I know you just mentioned, you know, the jury trial threshold, and I'm not an attorney, and I just want to say up front, you know, in my arguments on this bill, I never blamed attorneys. I don't think attorneys are doing anything, you know, wrong. I think the attorneys are acting within the parameters that the legislature has created, but clearly we're the second highest insurance rates in the country. We're about to be number one because Michigan just passed a big reform bill last session. And what are your thoughts on how we can lower the insurance rates and the thoughts on my piece of legislation, if you're familiar with it?
I apologize that I'm not intimately familiar with your legislation, Kyle, but I would agree with you.
Kirk.
I apologize. I'm sorry. I don't hear well.
Kirk, that's okay.
I would agree with you that our insurance rates are unreasonably high, and there are multiple reasons for that, as you know better than I. The fact is this. If you have the votes and you want to do something on civil justice reform that is geared toward reducing insurance rates, let's just take, for example, the jury threshold. Was that part of your legislation?
Yeah, my legislation, I can tell you quickly, it extended the prescriptive period to 2 years because we're an outlier in that area. We're only one of two states that has a 1 year. It lowered the jury trial threshold. It eliminated direct action, which we're one of only two states that has it, and we dealt with the collateral source issue as well.
All right. Well, I'll go to collateral source last, if I may. But on the other things, let's take your bill as written. Add one sentence. Upon signature by the governor, insurance rates shall be reduced by X percent, and the insurance commissioner, within 30 days of signature, shall start refunding all the overpaid premiums. See
well,
if you can get the insurance companies to go along with that. If that's the deal, make a deal.
Well, I tell you, that was the big elephant in the room, and that's how we originally approached the bill in what we thought was the more logical way, because it's not a one-size fits all. On the commercial side, the commercial auto insurance industry in Louisiana is collapsing. I mean, we lost six or eight carriers last year. There's really only two carriers that will even cover commercial vehicles anymore. But what we did was we said, look, after a year, after this bill is signed, we'll do a mandatory rate review, and the commissioner would look at all the books of all the auto insurance companies, and if their rates have gone down, they would have to lower their rates according to how much their costs have gone down. So we would not let them profit from the reform, and as long as it's actuarially proven that their costs have gone down, then their rates shall, not may, which is the difference between a bill, as you know, that does something and that doesn't do anything, that they shall go down accordingly. So, you know, the easiest thing would be to do a one-size-fits-all and just say everybody's got to cut their rates. But I think once the costs start going down, the insurance companies are going to cannibalize themselves, and we'll start getting competition, and the rates will go down, because right now we just don't have any competition.
Well, I'm not articulate about the intricacies of insurance, and I'm sure you know quite more than I about that. I will say this on collateral source, though, if you don't mind, to try to educate you, because that is a red herring, all right? You're a responsible person. Mr. Engster here is a responsible person. He takes his money and buys his health insurance from his family. He could be using that for something else. He uses it to buy health insurance. I run over you or he. Why should my insurance company benefit from Jim Inkster's using his money to buy his health insurance. You're going to pit all kind of people against each other. Health insurance companies come into lawsuits and recover back what they've been out from the company who caused the problem in the first place. That's fair. The health insurance company shouldn't be penalized because of my fault, nor should you if I'm the person you hurt.
All right. Well, Representative Talbot, we certainly will call on you. Thank you for calling in today. It's good to hear your voice, and this is a bill I think that will resurface and is worthy for more discussion. Thank you, sir. And our number is 877-217-5757. We're about to go to a break, but we will return, and we have some people waiting to talk to Lewis Owens Unglesby, Dan downtown, and Brandon in Mid-City, and some lines are open as well if you'd like to join us. We'll also hear later in the hour from Carly McCord, the exceptional 30-year-old talented reporter who died Saturday on her way to Atlanta. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. Lewis Owens Unglesby is with us for another segment, and we'll even push him into the fourth segment for a moment or two. And we want to thank Tara Pelche and Ernie Singleton, who have contributed in the last few minutes, showing their support for WRKF. We're now about $9,000 away from our goal for the year, $475,000, very modest goal set by the staff at WRKF. Please call 926-3050, extension 11 or extension 18. That's 225-926-3050. Gwen Pelagi and Marlene Hoff waiting for your call, 225-926-3050. And our number is 877-217-5757. Dan downtown. Dan, you're on with Lewis Unglesby. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, Mr. Unglesby, are you aware that legislators like Kirk Talbot have also declared that so-called nonprofit corporations like Our Lady of the Lake can legally discriminate, harass, and retaliate against employees because of race, sex, age, and disability?
I apologize. I didn't understand the question. I'm not aware of any of the things you just said. I'll take it for, you know, if that's true, that's a shame. But I don't know what you're asking me.
All right. Thank you, Dan. 877-217-5757. Brandon in Mid-City, you're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Brandon. Good morning to you.
You've got Wells.
Okay. I'm sorry. Wells in Morgan City. Hi, Wells. I'm sorry. You are on the air, Wells.
I just heard the phone do something funny, and I figured
I misidentified you. I'm glad you corrected me.
No, that's all right. Listen, about a few months ago, I was riding my motorcycle. Look, I'm 68 years old, been riding 55 years. I watch everybody. Woman ran a stop sign, hit me. 8 broken ribs, punctured lung. I was flown into University Medical Center and incurred almost $100,000 worth of medical bills. And, you know, I didn't do this. Well, here I've been getting bills. Apparently, they dug through my wallet, found my insurance card. She only had $30,000 worth of coverage, and by law, they're only obligated to pay $30,000. And I only had $30,000 worth of uninsured motorists. And so there's about a $40,000 discrepancy that now they're coming after me for. I didn't do this. Why the hell am I paying for it?
Well, I don't think that's fair myself, Wells, and I'm glad to know you're making a good recovery. There's no way to answer your question. Of course, it would be in a better world if we had higher insurance rates that were required. One of the problems in Louisiana, I'm told this, and I'm willing to be corrected.
You're talking about higher insurance limits.
Yeah, that one of the problems in Louisiana is we have so many poor people, honestly, that we have low insurance requirements, and unfortunately, many of those insurance policies are financed. A lot of these companies are really finance companies as much as they are insurance companies. And so you don't get the kind of responsible coverage, perhaps, that you would like for these terrible things that happen to people like you.
Thank you, Wells, and I hope you do well. Bill Huey writes, please ask Lewis who benefits most from so-called tort reform and whether he thinks a business court should be established to handle civil cases.
No. Nothing should be established to handle civil cases except 12 of your friends and neighbors, period. They're the ones that have been deciding it since the Magna Carta. They're the ones that need to keep deciding it. The society in which we live does a wonderful job of making fair and just decisions and governing, if you will, the various interests of different groups of people as they are affected. The other thing is that those 12 people, unlike you and I, are not going to hear propaganda. They're not going to hear misinformation. They're not going to hear half-truths. They actually hear the witnesses and hear the evidence. The evidence is there. The witnesses get asked the questions. The judge runs the show. It's the of all the things in democracy, without question, the most democratic and the most fair and the most dependable is the legal system, particularly the jury trial. Now, as far as who benefits the most from tort reform, clearly big business. Nobody in Louisiana.
All right. I've got a few people who want you to comment on what's going on in the national scene, and we have a gentleman as Attorney General who's been there before. He was the appointee of George H.W. Bush, and now for Donald John Trump, William Barr, and column in today's New York Times, Barr thinks America's going to hell. Why would a seemingly respectable, semi-retired lion of the Washington establishment undermine the institution he's sworn to uphold, writes the editorial, incinerate his own reputation, and appear to willfully misrepresent the reports of special prosecutors and inspectors general, all to defend one of the most lawless and corrupt presidents in American history? And why has this particular attorney general appeared at this pivotal moment in our republic? A quote follows from Barr saying that President Trump's political opponents are guilty of unprecedented abuse and are engaged in the systematic shredding of norms and the undermining of the rule of law. That from Bill Barr, our attorney general. Are you a fan?
No, but not because of anything pro or con about Bill Barr or Donald Trump. The attorney general, while he's appointed by the president, has for history been considered independent. The Justice Department has been considered independent. The whole trust that people have in the federal Justice Department has been based on hundreds of years of legitimate independence from any political winds one way or the other. And it is unfortunate that the Attorney General is acting like that. The last time we had an Attorney General that was really an advocate was John Mitchell, and we know how that wound up with Nixon.
He went to jail.
So I don't know what is promoting Mr. Barr to talk like that, but criticizing his own citizens, which is what he's doing, is antagonistic to his job. It's quite fine for somebody who's a partisan to criticize the other side, but he's not supposed to be one.
Well, he's just the kind of attorney general the president sought. When he had Jeff Sessions, he said, where's my Roy Cohn? Well, he found him in Bill Barr, who has been a defender of the president. And some
people the president forgets to tell us, or you journalists, no criticism to you, forget to say, Roy Cohn was a completely discredited and eventually disbarred gangster lawyer in New York of whom no one had any respect at all. And basically,
and he was the
contempt.
Lawyer for Joe McCarthy, too, and that's not necessarily a badge of honor.
You hate to speak ill of the dead, but Roy Cohn had no redeeming values that anyone's found yet. So,
but President Trump liked him. They were very good friends.
Well, he could never have lasted in a courtroom 5 minutes. No judge would have put up with Roy Cohn's foolishness.
Well, another listener, Holly in the Garden District, notes, and I heard this the other day myself, that President Trump has now appointed 50 federal judges in 3 years. Barack Obama appointed 56 in 8 years. What is Trump doing and also two Supreme Court justices, the same as Obama. What is he doing to remake the judiciary for a generation or more?
I hope nothing. You hope that some of these young people that want to be federal judges or people that want to be federal judges say what they need to say to the Federalist Institute and some of these other conservative think tanks in order to get the job, and then in real life, when they get the job, and they see what it's about and understand the majesty and importance of deciding about other people that are standing right in front of them, that they'll make good decisions. You hope that what you want is when a judge takes an oath, you're not a Democrat anymore, you're not a Republican, you're not a liberal, you're not a conservative. Your new party is the law and the facts. That's what you hope, and we have to cling to that hope.
Now, Wendy Vitter is a federal judge now, the wife of David Vitter, and you may very well go before her court. And by all accounts, I hear good things about her, but she is married to a political opponent of yours, a man you've had differences. Would that make a difference if you had to go to court in New Orleans with federal judge Wendy Vitter?
No, I think Wendy Vitter, by all accounts, is a very good Catholic. And I think that trumps, if you will, any of her leanings. She may hear a lot of foolishness at home around the supper table, but ideally she doesn't bring it with her to Camp Street.
All right. But another listener points out that the judge does matter. He says, just look, this is Tom in Monroe listening online, just look at Frank Palazzola. If Edwin Edwards had drawn a different judge, would he have not gone to prison?
I don't know. I don't think he'd have nearly gone to prison as long. All you got to do is look at this guy who was Trump's campaign manager that stole...
Manafort?
Yeah, Manafort. And what, he paid over $50 million. He just stole, didn't pay taxes on it. He didn't get 10 years. So you would say that Governor Edwards got an extraordinarily difficult sentence if you took for granted that he was guilty at all. But... A judge can bend things. A judge can tell a jury something and send them a message that they get as to who to listen to or who to disregard in the courtroom. A judge has tremendous power, but by and large, almost universally, they're doing their best and they're going to be fair. Sometimes you run into a problem, but like I say... all comers, I'd put the judiciary right at the top of.
All right. We're going to spend a few more minutes service with Lewis Unglesby, and then we'll hear an encore interview from the late Carly McCord. Lewis, by the way, in the award he received 3 weeks ago, the Calogero Award, it was noted that he's won more than 50 outright not guilty verdicts in state and federal jury trials. So he has gone to court a few times in his 40-year career, 45 years now. Born in 1949 in New Orleans, grew up in Shreveport, had a paper route in the fourth grade. Now, we heard Donald Trump had a paper route from his next-door neighbor, Stephen Himesfield. He threw it from a limo. I bet Lewis Unglesby did not throw his paper route from a limo.
Swing by.
We'll be back after this pause. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with this year's 2019 Pascal Calogero Award winner, the highest honor in the legal fraternity and sorority in Louisiana, named after a great jurist himself. Lewis, by the way, a listener asked, he graduated from Ole Miss but LSU Law School. First job was with Sam D'Amico, right?
That's true, yeah.
And Sam was always the best dress lawyer in Louisiana.
He was a great lawyer. I was very lucky. I got to know a lot of great lawyers before I ever was a lawyer. I'd never met a lawyer, but once I got to Baton Rouge and went to work at the courthouse, I got to meet a lot of wonderful lawyers. And, I have a lot to live up to that I have not achieved, but I saw some really wonderful, wonderful lawyers.
And Sam, I had the pleasure of riding the elevator with in the old State National Life Building for many years. I learned a lot riding the elevator with him and Louis Corrett.
Yeah, in those days, they all wore hats. I was lucky. I was at the end of the hat era, so I didn't have to wear one. But every lawyer wore a hat to work.
Yeah, and that legal firm was, of course, the genesis for a lot of great careers in not only you, Jack Danff, right? Many others.
Many lawyers. Many about others. Five or six judges. It was a real... They had a great legacy.
It really ticked Mr. Sam off when people would attack the legal fraternity. G. Gordon West, it was E. Gordon West, right?
Yeah, the federal judge.
Yeah. He He once gave a speech attacking lawyers. Sam didn't like it very much, did he?
No, it was interesting. It was very interesting. People were, I guess, more independent in those days, but for whatever reason, the Bar Association luncheon used to be a big deal, and they put it on TV, and whoever the speaker was, he'd be on TV, and Judge West was, of course, invited. And he gave a speech, and his speech was about how bad we all were, that none of us knew the rules, we didn't know how to practice law in federal court, and we really were not very good at our profession. And some of the lawyers, because he's a federal judge, they think, well, it's over, they got to stand up and clap. And I remember Mr. D'Amico and Mr. Corrett were sitting right at the front with some other prominent lawyers, and I thought I had to stand up and clap, and he grabbed me and shoved me down. I said, we don't clap for that.
No.
We stand up for ourselves. We need to do more of that. Lawyers, right. If you're listening, we need to do more of standing up for ourselves.
All right. And what an erudite and enlightened audience we have. When I said G. Gordon, a listener says, do not confuse Gordon West with Gordon McKernan. And notes that his given name was Elmer Gordon West. How about that for an educated audience? Phil in Jefferson Terrace, please be brief. You'll be our final caller for Lewis Owens Unglesby. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Jim. And my question, though, can Brett Kavanaugh be impeached for perjury? I mean, the man lied through his teeth.
All right, what about that? Could Kavanaugh be going out the gate? Is it possible to impeach a Supreme Court justice?
I don't think so. I don't know, but I don't think so. I think when a Supreme Court justice takes the oath, he's it forever. And whatever he did before he took the oath, he's home free.
And even if it could happen, let's face it, it won't happen unless he commits a crime while he's on the court. Then
right.
It could happen.
Only if he were caught doing some, you know, legitimate graft or something.
Well, Lewis Unglesby, it's always fun to talk with you, and thanks for what you do.
Thank
45 y'all. Years. 45 years of practicing law for this man.